around. So I wanted to, based on our discussion the last time about feeders, I wanted to pitch that story to my boss, and she said, why don't we also just sort of expand this story out to talk about NRVP as well. We can sort of maybe, you know, kill two birds in one story.
Yeah.
And I gather that's, are you now, I don't know, the director of that program? You're certainly at the top of the pyramid in some regard. But can you break down the structure for me a little bit, if you would?
I am not at the top of the pyramid. I am so far below, I don't even know if I can see the pyramid. But you mean as far as
who oversees NRVP?
Well, and Captain Don Nelson. He oversees all of the NRVP chapters.
Okay.
And that's because at one time he was our lieutenant, and he believed in it so much that he wanted to keep it when he was promoted to captain. Yeah. And he's a fantastic person to deal with for fish and wildlife. So, you know, I'm really glad that when he promoted, he kept the NRVP program under his purview, because he's a great supporter of what we do. So, and he's brought this program so far ahead, you know, leaps and bounds from even when I first started. So, okay. You know, hats off to him. So if you really want some in-depth information, it would be best to contact him.
Okay.
All of our lieutenants down south started during the pandemic, and they're really still trying to get their feet under them as far as what really goes on as far as field activity since the pandemic and us getting back out there. So they don't quite, I don't know what their, you know, thoughts are as far as what we really do, but Captain Nelson would have the most information on the NRVP. But, you know, obviously we've grown and included a lot of stuff in our activities that, you know, was only a thought even when the NRVP first started. Yeah. So, you know, like we responded to the Huntington Beach oil spill to help out. As a matter of fact, my duties were to drive the director around. So, and the chiefs and whatnot. So, and Secretary Crowfoot, that was my duty, but, other people were moving wildlife and whatnot. So, I mean, we expand our duties into so many different areas that it probably, you know, we could be here all day listing everything that we do.
Why don't I do this? I'm going to talk to Captain Nelson for the big picture NRVP stuff. Why don't I just focus with you then on who you are, why you're involved, what you get out of it, and then also, you know, how the dealing with folks who are leaving food out for wildlife is becoming a big part of your mission. We can talk about how important that is too. How's that?
Oh, that'd be great. So I retired after 30 years in law enforcement. Mm-hmm. I was with the LA County Sheriff's Department and retired as a lieutenant. And when I came over to Fish and Wildlife and saw just the different things that Fish and Wildlife had to offer, because as a lieutenant and being the watch commander of a sheriff's station, dealing with city councils, I saw Wildlife Watch as a really good fit for me, because mm-hmm. it's kind of where I came from. So I started going to meetings with Dave Dodge, who was originally probably I call him the godfather of Wildlife Watch, because he's really the one that started it and started getting it going. And he since stepped away, because for 4 or 5 years, he went to council meetings night after night by himself, and he just kind of got beat down and needed a break. But I saw the natural fit, and I really liked the thought that dealing with cities and governments and teaching people about wildlife was a natural fit for me. So that's kind of why I gravitated towards it over anything else that Fish and Wildlife had to offer for activities. So since then, we've kind of taken it and just really grown Wildlife Watch with what it does. So, you know, Wildlife Watch is the complete pairing of Neighborhood Watch, as far as Neighborhood Watch deals with crime and Wildlife Watch deals right. with wildlife. Right. So we do the 3-day class. Matter of fact, I just got off the phone with the chief of police for Sierra Madre.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to the council. They're going to start getting their group together for us to teach them their 3-day class, their police volunteers, and we'll be giving them their 3-day class on Wildlife Watch and getting them on board. So for me, that's, I mean, I really like that aspect. I like getting them prepared. I like empowering the cities to deal with these issues themselves, because obviously the department can't constantly be in every city. They just don't have the manpower. I mean, I look at our southern enforcement wardens. We have one.
Yeah.
And there's no way he could keep up on everything there is possible to do. So
when this program first came together, is that why there is a law enforcement, such a large, strong law enforcement connection, is to help with the wardens first? I mean, that's where a lot of work can go into this.
Yeah, I mean, obviously our work is to ease the warden's load. I mean, okay, if they had to go to every city council meeting and every community meeting, they'd never get anything done.
Right.
So pre-pandemic, I was probably doing 3 nights a week, maybe sometimes 4, to council meetings or trainings or community meetings, and I can't picture our wardens doing that. And we invite them, if they have the availability, to come out, to come to some of these meetings. Some of our more high-profile cities where we're having the issues, law enforcement takes a bigger proactive role, like Sierra Madre right now with their ongoing bear issues with the 12 different home break-ins by bears. But, you know, and then when we're out and about, depending on how we get our canvassing requests for the cities, you know, our requests could come in a variety of ways for dealing with wildlife issues in the city. Could come in from the city directly, it could come in from our law enforcement division, or it could come in from our biologist. Or it could come in via our wildlife line. We get the information. I'll discuss it with our law enforcement or our biologist and see how they want us to respond, and then we respond accordingly. And in our canvassing, we get out, we knock on every door in our target area. And if they're not home, we leave a brochure. Mm-hmm. And if they're home, we talk to them about wildlife. Do they think anybody in their neighborhood's feeding? Just anything that relating to the particular wildlife issue going on in their neighborhood.
Right. It sounds like this is pretty similar to police agencies really relying on a lot of volunteers. Many of them are older, and I'm not saying that's you, but you are retired. You know, like, I'm in the city of Stockton. Whether it's the city of Stockton PD or the San Joaquin County Sheriff's Office, they have a number of volunteers who help with a lot of different things that help actual investigators and deputies and cops run down the bigger problems. But these volunteers are out in the community, out in the field, and they're also a presence. And that sounds like this is pretty similar.
Yeah, I mean, that's very, very similar. Okay. And with what we do, we're just dealing with the wildlife issues within the city, although I don't know too many police departments where their volunteers will actually go out,
right,
and go to city council meetings and whatnot. So,
sure.
But the ground pounding, the footwork, their volunteers are certainly out doing. And once we give them the 3-day training, they're definitely out there dealing with the issues. Prime example, we did a 3-day class for the city of Fountain Valley. The following week, we had a severe coyote issue within their community. That team went right to work on the ground, getting out and handling that. Whereas I would have had to put together a team, let's get out and get a group together to canvass. Now the city's doing it. Mm-hmm. They're invested because it's their own city. They live there. And nothing better than hearing from people within their own community to deal with wildlife issues. Right. So
what led you personally to get involved the way you are?
Like I said, just from my background, and I just thought it was a more natural fit for me, because I had been dealing, I mean, I used to travel with Sheriff Baca.
Mm-hmm.
Regularly. We'd go to various countries and lecture. So, like I said, that aspect for me, it was just a natural fit. And you know, I've developed a lot of contacts, like Sierra Madre, their chief of police, I know very well.
Yeah.
So dealing with him right now, you know, we have a really good rapport, and there's a lot of law enforcement chiefs that I have good rapport with, so it's easy for me to transition in and deal with them. And we offer an in-service training for law enforcement. And I think for me, doing an in-service law enforcement training on wildlife is better coming from me because I was in law enforcement. I know that's probably the worst crowd to have to teach is law enforcement. So I get it because I used to do it all over the world.
Sure,
but,
sure.
It's just a fantastic fit for me just because of my background and having done that type of teaching. So
why are you doing anything? Why aren't you farming, gardening, golfing, or playing tennis all day long instead of... It sounds like this is practically a full-time job for you.
I know. Sometimes it feels like that. You know, there's been months I've done over 160 hours of volunteering a month, but, you know, there's other months where I don't have as many because, like, I just got back from Hawaii, so I take some time for myself to get out and travel, but I just really like the aspect of dealing with cities and, like I said, empowering them to deal with their own wildlife issues. Yeah. And the more knowledge I can provide them, it eases their fear in dealing with whether it's a coyote or a bear or a mountain lion. Okay. Now they're empowered to deal with that, and they're not as frightened, and they're not as likely to react adversely to where now they kind of know what to do.
Do you have a particular wildlife background? Are you an outdoors person? Are you a hunter, a fisher person?
I have zero, well, outside of being in the Army and bivouacking for months at a time or deploying, I have no wildlife background. It's just everything that I've been taught since I've been here over the last 4 years. But
and where are you from originally?
From here, from California, Southern California.
Okay, all right.
I mean, for the most part, I was born and raised here, but my father was in the military, so we did travel a lot. So this is just where we ended up. But, you know, I grew up, went to high school here, went to college here, and then went to the military, so, and came back and went into law enforcement. But
what branch of the military and for how long, if you don't mind me asking?
I was in the Army for 6 years.
Okay.
So, you know, it was one of those, go join the military, and if you like it and you still want to go into law enforcement when you get out, then that's because I have relatives in law enforcement, and that's kind of the direction they pointed me, go to the military.
Okay.
You know, get some growing up. I was 18, and that's what I did is I went, saw the world, and came back and joined law enforcement.
How often when you were a cop in the sheriff's office would you have to deal with a wildlife issue of some sort, whether it was a mountain lion grabbing a kid or a bear that wouldn't leave a community and cops got involved? I mean, it must have happened every now and then.
I didn't work a foothill community. I worked primarily like our ghetto areas, like Compton.
Yeah.
I did work, one of our foothill communities. But it's funny, when I give classes in the city to various cities, I always tell them, I said, man, when I wish I had the wildlife knowledge I have now that I had when I was a young street cop, because I can remember getting calls for mangled pets and stuff.
Right.
And our first thought was, man, that must be some satanic ritual going on.
Huh.
We never even in our wildest dreams thought a coyote came and just shredded that pet.
Right.
So, which is probably hindsight 2020, is probably what it was. But law enforcement, you know, regular, typical law enforcement isn't taught anything about wildlife.
Yeah,
and
right.
So knowing what I know now, I'm a firm believer that something needs to be added into their already overburdened curriculum, but especially for the communities that deal with wildlife. And that's one of the things our law enforcement division is dealing with some of our foothill communities now, is working with law enforcement on teaching them what they can and can't do and dealing with wildlife. So I wish that they had something when I was in law enforcement to know what to do to deal with that, versus, you know, some of the things that we thought was going on that were not. But
yeah,
you know, I really, you know, in retirement you need something to do. To me, this was, you know, a couple of guys I knew were already in Fish and Wildlife, and they talked me into joining. Took them a few years, but Like I said, once I got in, saw some of the different things they had to offer, this was the best thing for me to gravitate to. And
what percentage, how many hours a week are you putting in, or a month, would you say, average?
Probably about anywhere between 130 and 150.
Wow. You ever get, there must be times you think, I'm working a full-time job here. I mean, what am I doing? I should be getting some money for all this.
No, I don't. You know what? It's been brought up before about taking some type of part-time position, but I like what I'm doing, and if when I don't and I want to walk away, then I know I can.
Sure, that's true. True. So I gather the last time we talked, I was fascinated by all the work you're doing on trying to convince people in Southern California, where so many communities bump up against so much habitat. We need to do whatever we can to convince people not to make it so easy for wildlife to blend into those communities by entertaining them and feeding them. Is it just, is that a major assignment for you that is in, working in that area?
Yeah, when Wildlife Watch really started growing and expanding, talking with Vicky and Alex, one of the things that we had discussed was, when we get these issues, or even a bite, to get notified, not necessarily right away, but somewhere along the line so that we can respond appropriately with the education once the wardens are done, if it's a bite and what they're doing in a community, or if it's just a feeder getting out to educate them.
Yeah.
And what I do is, after I go out and hit a community for a feeder, I not only take pictures, I write an after-action report and attach that to the area lieutenant. That way, they need, if they need to send the warden out, they kind of already have some ammunition to what they're dealing with to go ahead and cite them.
Right.
So, because the part of their process to building their case for court is education. Because I can tell you, some people don't even know it's illegal to feed.
Right.
So they do it because they feel bad for them and they think they can't get fed, so they do it. They don't realize it's illegal.
Yeah.
So that education for the wardens building a case is really crucial on, you know, educating them that, hey, you can't feed and this is why. So along with our Keep Me Wild brochures, they also get a copy of our 251-1, which says it's illegal to feed wildlife.
Mm-hmm.
So
has this always been a big emphasis for us, or it's becoming a bigger emphasis maybe in the last year, 3 years, 5 years?
In the last year and a half to 2 years, it's become a bigger issue because I think too, with the pandemic, and it forced a lot of people to be at home. It forced a lot of people to see stuff they don't normally see because they're gone.
Yeah.
And now, like, our call volume at the very beginning of the pandemic shot up because people were seeing bears or coyotes or even raccoons, and they were calling nonstop with sightings.
Yep.
Now that people have kind of gone back to work, you know, it's not as prevalent, but I think that led to more human wildlife conflicts because people were there and they're like, oh, they look hungry, let me feed them.
Yeah.
So,
So what is it about people when you try and have these conversations with them that they just don't want? You lay out a perfectly good story and reason why we shouldn't be leaving food out. And if I don't know how many of them there are, these people that insist on continuing. Maybe it's just one for every million people, or maybe it's more common than that. But what's their personality trait that they just don't want to believe it's okay to let animals be animals?
Well, I'd probably say, if I had to give like a number, like 8 out of 10 are elderly, and they think that the particular wildlife isn't going to be able to survive unless they feed it.
Yeah.
A couple coyote feeders ago, he said, I know I shouldn't be feeding, but I feel bad for them. This one limps. I mean, they name them. I think it's something within their psychological makeup makes them think that they're being more helpful than what they are. And, you know, one lady who was feeding bears thought, you know, gave us the I'm becoming one with my native side, and
oh boy.
I have to feed them because that's part of that. Yeah, we hear all kinds of crazy stories, but...
and ironically, you know, of course, they're actually harming the animal by doing what they think is helping.
Yeah, and I mean, we had one kid in Pasadena that got bit by a coyote just standing in his driveway, and it's because the neighbor wasn't feeding coyotes directly. They were feeding the peacocks, and the peacock food was bringing in the coyotes. And so there was that indirect food chain, and sometimes that's what we see too. It's not someone directly feeding a coyote.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's indirect, and that lady didn't realize her peacock feeding was creating the issue that it did. So we were able to educate her, and I mean, I think that was literally like a week before the pandemic hit that we had that issue.
Mm-hmm.
And
so we're doing more work in outreach. Is that what I understand?
Yeah.
Okay. Explain what's that called, that outreach, and what are we doing as part of that outreach?
You mean when we go out into the neighborhood?
Yeah.
We call it canvassing.
Okay.
So where we go out and canvass a neighborhood, and it's basically educational. You know, it's one of those, hi, we're from Fish and Wildlife. Have you seen any bears in your neighborhood lately? Or do you know of any on particular issues? Yeah. And we'll talk with them about wildlife. And then we also offer them a backyard audit, meaning, hey, have you seen wildlife? Do you think they come in your yard? Why do you think they come in your yard? I don't know. Do you mind if I take a look?
Yeah.
And there's an audit sheet that we give them. That's if they say don't come in now, but we leave them an audit sheet, and they can self-audit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's simple things. A lot of things people don't think to look as far as barbecues.
Yeah,
and
right.
Especially because we're getting into barbecue season, people cook, close the grill, and they're done.
Yeah.
And the remnants bring in wildlife because of the smell. So
yeah, sure.
Those are the type of things that we look for when we do our backyard audit. So...
But talk about the work we're doing now. Are we getting more aggressive with feeder issues and feeder problem people? We're doing more with inciting. We're doing more from the traditional law enforcement approach, right? We're trying to warn them that they're breaking rules, and we threaten, and maybe we follow through with those threats, and we're going to take them to court.
Yeah, what happens after we go out and educate? That information then goes to law enforcement. Hey, I made contact with Jane Doe at this address.
Yeah.
And this is what I observed. And 9 times out of 10, they blatantly have food out in their yard. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't even have to break my neck to look for it because it's there as I walk up to the door. And, you know, I lay everything out for the warden. The warden will then go out. And if that's still happening while they're out there, they'll probably get a citation. Then they're going to have to go to court
because mm-hmm.
It's a misdemeanor citation. If they don't...
Oh, man. Shoot.
Did I lose you?
Yep, and I called you right back, so I probably didn't lose more than 5 seconds.
Oh, okay. I don't know what you did.
How often has someone been taken to court in the last 2 years, 5 years, whatever time period you can put on this?
That I don't know. I mean, because within the last year and a half or 2 years is where we've really become active with our canvassing.
Yeah.
I'm just now starting to keep track of who's been cited and who hasn't. And some people can just opt to pay the fine and be done with it and not ever do it because they can. But I don't have any actual statistics. I don't know if somebody in law enforcement may, and that I couldn't even tell you if anybody's even tracking it because I don't think that's something they track.
All right.
Our new diversion program may start having the availability to track that, since if they're getting cited,
yeah,
they'll go to the diversion for that, and that's going to be one of those you're going to have to show up, like traffic school.
Right.
So okay. The diversion program may offer a better way to track who goes to court and who doesn't.
Right. Okay. Is Kent running that, or is somebody else?
Is what?
Is Kent Smurl now sort of running the diversion program?
He's writing the details for the program along with a few other people, namely like Vicky and Alex, and then a couple other people are assisting with that.
Okay.
But I still think that's probably a good year or more away from being implemented. Because it takes a lot too with the courts to get them involved with.
Do you have experience in the last year or two with a specific case in which someone, and yet because they continued that violation practice, we ended up taking them to court?
Well, I know of one within the last 4 or 5 months that the wardens had to go out and cite a second time.
Yep.
I don't know where their cases are. I'd have to, and that was for a coyote feeder, I'd have to inquire from law enforcement to see where that's at because it is so recent.
Yeah. If you could track that down for me, I don't need that person's name, but I wouldn't mind the community and what his or her issues have been and how successful we hope to be with that person.
The lieutenant's off today because I'm due to have a conference call with him tomorrow, so I'll ask him. I just wrote myself a note.
Okay. And all I need is a paragraph or two description from you. We don't have to do a big phone call again.
No, I'll send that back out to you. But, you know, I'd say most of the people that we've dealt with who are feeding wildlife, no matter what the wildlife is, thinks that they're doing some type of service for the wildlife when, in essence, they don't realize the trickle effect that they have, much like the lady feeding peacocks, which led to a little 3-year-old being bit by a coyote because they wanted food and they weren't getting it. So I think it's the education with, hey, you're not only bringing this wildlife in, and when they see a human being and they're not being fed from that human, whether it's you or someone else, they're going to lash out because they're not getting what they're used to getting. And they can't distinguish you from your neighbor that you're feeding and your neighbor isn't. So we try to broaden their horizons to see the big picture on what the feeding causes and the fact that it's illegal to feed. And just try to enlighten them and educate them on the harmful effects of what they're doing.
And what percentage of those folks you deal with understand and they promise to do their best afterwards and they actually follow through, versus what percentage just refuse to play ball and they will continue to with that feeding activity?
I'd say 10% or less actually realize I'm not going to do it again.
Oh my gosh, I was hoping it was going to be the other way around.
No, it's sad. I wish I could say it was higher. Like our one feeder in LA feeding coyotes, who said he couldn't help himself. He said he was going to stop, and then about 3 weeks ago, I got another call saying he was back at it again.
Wow.
So he had a small break. He got cited from not only us, he got cited by LA City twice. And now he's been cited by us twice. He just can't stop himself. He feels bad and he knows it's wrong. But, you know, I don't know if it's going to take a big hit to this guy's wallet for the citations. Yeah. To get them to realize it's wrong. I mean,
so
hopefully, maybe.
Do you know if anybody's been not just cited, but actually fined as part of this process, or are we still too new in this program?
I'll have to follow up with law enforcement because we may be too new into actual tracking to where we're at now. You know, like I said, when we first started doing the canvassing, I wasn't even really tracking where we were going. We'd just go out and do it. I'd write an after action, send it to the area lieutenant. Well, now I'm keeping statistics on where we're going and what we're doing for end of year reporting.
Yeah.
So, plus it also allows me to see if I've been in that community multiple times.
Yeah.
Like our issues with Arcadia, when I started going out there to the same 100 block or area over and over again, I realized we have an issue because we're in these neighborhoods repeatedly. So, and why are we out there? What's the issue going on? And it allows us to take a look at, with our biologists, what's going on, what's changed in the environment.
Yeah.
That this is ongoing, whether it's just sightings or encounters or a bite or a feeder.
Right. Okay.
You know, it really depends. So it's just allowing me to track our neighborhoods and see if, you know, we're getting repeat customers into what we're doing.
Yeah.
So,
and just so I understand, majority of the incidents you deal with are coyote, or is it equal number coyote, mountain lion, bear? I mean, what's the breakdown on this particular kind of wildlife?
Well, I'll tell you right now, what are we in? The 7th of March, bears are leading the way. So far this year, I've done 2 coyote, 3 mountain lion, and let's see, 10 bear. That's kind of where we're.
Yeah, 10 we're bear what? Visits, 10 bear reports, 10 what?
These haven't been bites, nor are bears feeders yet that we know of. Oftentimes we'll get, hey, there's, you know, we've been getting reports about aggressive bears. Can you go out and educate? And we get out there and we find out somebody's feeding.
Yeah.
And I'll give you a prime example. Somebody was complaining that a resident was leaving their trash out and it was creating bears in their neighborhood. So we went out just to educate, came upon, that guy wasn't even leaving his trash out anymore. He said, yeah, I realized I was getting lazy. But, hey, this lady across the street is allowing bears to sleep in her garage.
God.
And we found a much larger issue. She was feeding the bears. She was allowing them to stay in her garage. She was a hoarder. So it was a bigger issue to contact the city and deal with. So sometimes the simple educational canvas turns into,
No,
that guy down the street is feeding.
Is that bear situation still going on with the sleeping in the garage? Oh, my God.
Good. I haven't followed up since right before the holidays. The district attorney's office was involved with all of her other issues.
Okay.
I hadn't got any contacts or emails or calls from the community lately, so I'm taking it that it's being addressed and talking to the city manager. It was something they were aggressively dealing with. It wasn't one of those, I mean, they brought in, not the city attorney, but they brought in the district attorney to prosecute this lady. And I don't know at what stage it's in.
Sure. What town is that?
That's Arcadia.
Arcadia. And you know, Janice, let me back you up. You gave me a breakdown. 2 coyote, 3 mountain lion, 10 bear. What? Reports or what?
Canvases that we've done this year so far.
Got it. Okay, good.
So,
good.
You know, and like I say, let me bring that back up. Oh, there it is. Out of that, let's see, 1, 2 were feeders. And I'm not done with my bears for this grouping. Mm-hmm. We're going out Friday, so I don't know if we'll come up with any feeders. You know, that's always to be seen, but, it runs the gamut.
Yeah. Let me back this up a little bit to you. What do you get out of this? What's the satisfaction you get out, or what's been an incident or a situation that brought you great satisfaction, that told you you were doing good work as far as this program?
I think just going out, whether we get the feeder to stop or not, it's mainly educating the rest of the community on what to look for and how to better prepare themselves for maybe an influx of wildlife because of a feeder. We teach them little simple things, talk to them about hazing, what they could do and carry with them if they're out on a walk and they should encounter a particular wildlife. Arming them with that knowledge, to me, it's satisfying knowing that they're getting that information to better help themselves. It's much like, I always equate it to people this way. Look, when I grew up, we could leave our houses wide open and our cars wide open. You could leave the keys in the ignition. You didn't have to worry about it. now you can't leave that stuff open. You can't leave your keys in the car. We have to change. And much like with wildlife, we have to change with our times and we have to adjust our patterns. And just like you could not have to worry about seeing a bear run down your neighborhood, now you have to carry a whistle or something loud to scare that wildlife off because they're going to be in your neighborhood.
Right.
And that's something that we have to adjust with. And I think just easing their fears with wildlife in their community, to me, is a blessing because it takes away their fear.
Yeah, good. Okay. And I'm sorry, I you probably told me and I didn't write it down. How many years have you been a volunteer with CDFW?
I'm over 4 years now, heading towards five.
Okay.
So
how much more?
Not long, but getting there.
Yeah.
All right. Working my way up.
All right. Hey, Janice, thank you. That's all I need for now. I really appreciate it. I'm going to send Captain Nelson an email saying I'd like to talk with him. I assume he'll be open to this. Do you think we are seeking more volunteers to be part of the program? Could we use more?
Oh, for Fish and Wildlife or for Wildlife Watch?
Well, for both Wildlife Watch, but for the NRVP program.
Oh, most definitely. Every chapter is actively recruiting. I mean, we just brought in 8 new people into our chapter. You know, the ebb and flow of people coming and going, and the pandemic really wiped a lot of chapters out because we did have some older guys, and it kind of took them away from wanting to do that public interaction work.
Yeah.
I'm mentoring a guy right now who wants to be a warden, and he's doing fantastic, although in the long run, we'll lose him because he's young and he's going to move on to becoming a warden, but at least he's getting the knowledge and experience now. So we're always, always looking for volunteers to come into each and every chapter throughout the state.
Got it. Okay. So. Good. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time, and I'll have follow-up questions at some point, but this is a good place for me to start.
Yeah, and I'll be in touch with the lieutenant tomorrow, and I'll ask him if he has any statistics on, the fines or any repeat offenders.
Sounds good. Thanks, Janice. Appreciate
all right,
your help.
Thank you, sir.
Take care.
All right. Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye.